Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Okay. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago, state of Illinois. It's great. It's wonderful, folks. I'm happy. I'm giddy. I'm great. We've been off for a while, Martin Luther King, and you think about the New Year's and Christmas. So we're back. We're back. It's going to be a hell of a year, I understand. And I hope everybody's resolutions, if you have any, I hope they all come true. I have one myself, same as yours. Losing weight, because a lot of I put on, a lot of us do, we put on a lot of pounds during the holidays because we just eat, and I'm no exception, you know. So I'm out there on the treadmill and walking and exercising on the life cycle, just like you are. I want to try to look my best for the summer, if that's possible. That's possible for me. Anyway, I hope all you guys had a great Christmas, great New Year's, great Martin Luther King day, but it's all over now. I always contemplate that Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, after his birthday, is actually, you know, the end of the holidays for me. But you might have something different, but that's okay. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me all over the place. We do have a guest today, Wendy Henbest, I believe, is on the line. I'm thinking. But I could be wrong. All right. I am just so giddy to be back. I mean, just happy. I'm just thrilled and to be back on the radio broadcasting. I've been doing this for a long time, years, and I never cease to enjoy it. I never do. And I give all the credit to you guys out there. You've been listening. You've been dedicated. You know, you're podcasting the show, and that's great. I mean, we do have a rating systems here, and I can tell what's going on. And I want to thank everybody because I do appreciate it. I mean, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have a need to do this. And this show is all about making the world a better place. Any way that you can, any way that you can make the world a better place, and you have an idea about how you want to make this world a better place, there's no other place, no other show to do it than right here, 347-857-1762. You know, you can chime in, sit back, listen, and whatever you want to do. But this is all about making the world a better place. If you have something you want to share, I mean, that's up to you. I mean, we're going to do it regardless, because this is what this show is about. All right, let's go to the phones right quickly. I mean, hey, well, as soon as I come on, I got to, you know, go to the phone. Sometimes that's good. That's a good thing. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, it's Wendy Henbest.
Welcome to the show, Wendy.
Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Hamilton, Ontario.
Oh, wow, great. How's the weather?
Right now it's raining and it's foggy. For January, it's kind of weird because usually by now it's like snow, but it's like spring weather. Weird.
Yeah. It's the same here. I'm in Chicago. It's the same here. It's raining. It's foggy. And it's been doing this for a few days now. And everybody's wondering, where is the snow? Where is the snow? You know, it's like 40 degrees here. You know, everybody said it should be colder. It should be colder. It should be snow. Get a life. I think this is better than snow. I don't need 20 below zero.
I don't mind. I don't want.
I don't need. I don't need 12 inches of snow. You know. And, you know, get a life. I mean, this is great. This is wonderful. I mean, hey, why wish for something that could be a lot worse if it comes?
Exactly.
You know, so.
Enjoy it while we can, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many people are saying, where is the snow? Why isn't it cold? Why isn't it freezing? You want freezing? There's always a North Pole. Okay.
There you go.
All right. All right. Wendy Hinvest on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Tell us, give us a little bit of your bio and tell us a bit about what you do.
Okay, well, like I said, I live in Hamilton, Ontario. I am married and I have 5 children, ages 1, almost 3, 4, 7, and 9. I study, I have my real estate license, but I'm not doing that right now because I'm a stay-at-home mother. I'm a writer. I have written 5 children's books, and about 6 months ago, I released my first young adult novel. And I'm currently writing my next young adult novel, and I'm also attempting to write a middle grade book as well.
You say attempting.
Well, I've never written a middle grade book before. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've written children, I've written young adult, but I've never written a middle grade. So I'm writing that right now. I've had to do a lot of research on how to. Cause, you know, that they're very young age, so you have to be careful with words you use and things that you say. So, like, I've done a lot of research before I started writing it. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. Whatever you don't think you know how to write, if you're attempting to write it or you're a little bit apprehensive, just research. That's all you have to do. Research and then add your own take.
You have to research. Like, even for my novel that I wrote, I did a lot of research before I written, like, certain scenes and everything. Because I want to make sure it's realistic, right? Even though it's a fiction book, I don't want it to be believable that it happened. So I had to research a lot of things for this specific scene that I wrote, right?
That's the same thing I do. I'm a fiction writer too. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I write about in my stuff is true to life, but you know, I'll say it's fiction because some of the stuff is fiction, but you do kind of piggyback off the truth, you know.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so, tell us about what is this? Fizzy Tizzy?
Oh, Fizzy Tizzy. Okay. Well, okay. Fizzy Tizzy, I actually wrote that book when I had my, I started writing when after my husband and I had our second child. So I decided that I was going to write and to try to generate income. That's how it started. But afterwards, I just continue to write because I enjoy it. So I don't do it for the money. Now I just do it because I like it. So Fizzy Tizzy is basically based on our daughter, our first daughter. Because at the time I had my first daughter and I had a baby, and I wrote a book. It's basically about us. So it's about my husband and I and our first daughter. And she's a spunky little girl. You know, at the time she was about 3 or 4 when I wrote the book. So it's about a spunky little girl, lots of energy. You know, and I wrote the series. I wrote 5 different books. And each book is basically she has a different adventure, and each book has a lesson to be learned. So it's definitely relatable to kids in that age, like 3 to 4 year olds, because it's all about things that has that like that the children in that age group can relate to.
All right, you said you've written 5 in the series. Will there be more coming in that particular genre?
No, I am no longer writing children's books now. My passion is more young adults. Those are the kind of books I like to read. I've always been a big fan of that age group, and I don't know, like I had, even though I had a lot of fun doing kids books, my passion is definitely young adult. I really enjoy it. Like I had a blast writing my last book, like writing Masquerade of Lie. I had so much fun. Like I'm now writing my second, and I'm having it's a blast. I love it.
How do you go about writing for young adults? Can you give me an age range when you say young adults?
About 14 to 19. So like maybe like beginning high school, like grade nine to like I don't know, early college maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
It's not too far.
Again, I have to be careful with the things I say and the things I do. But I mean, at the same time, I am being realistic. Like, just like if you ever talk to a 14 or 15 or 16 year old, you know how they talk. Sometimes they swear.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, the books I've made it as realistic as I possibly can. But again, I did a lot of research, right?
And also, okay, you've done a lot.
I was gonna say I have a niece, and she's a young adult. She's 20,
mm-hmm.
but at the time when I wrote the book, she was 19. So I got a lot of input from her as well.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? It wasn't just research. I also talked to other people in that age group to make sure that I knew, okay, this makes sense, that makes sense. Kids that age do this, or they don't do that. You know what I mean? To make it realistic.
And then you weave it into some sort of story.
Pretty much. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I like to write thrillers. Like, the book I wrote, it's a mystery thriller. So I'm more into like the thrillers, dark psychological things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This book is a thriller. It's about a girl who, she's a small town girl. She moves, her parents get divorced. They move to a bigger city and she gets entangled in a murder and she's a prime suspect. And this poor girl,
wow.
So she's like, oh. Yeah, she's like, can you imagine? She's like, this poor girl, small town girl. She moves to a bigger city, and she's thrown into this new school, meets new friends, and she's all of a sudden, she's like the prime suspect in her investigation. She's like, what? So she's like trying to vindicate herself, and she's one obstacle after the next. I don't want to give too much away, but yeah.
You can give as much as way as you want. You're trying to push your book. You're trying to push what you want people to know.
I don't
want to
give away what's going to happen. I want people to read it.
Okay. All right. What do you actually enjoy about writing? What is so most enjoyable to you about just writing in general?
I like putting myself in the story. Like when I was writing young adult, The Masquerade of Lies, I pictured myself being the main character and going through everything she went through and how I would feel. Mm-hmm. I love that. I can envision, like, it's so much fun because like it's like you're in another world, and you probably can relate. You like fiction too.
Yeah, I can relate. I can relate. When I first started writing fiction, you know, I was telling myself that, hey, wow, I can be anything I want in these books. I can make myself anything that I want.
That's the point. You can do anything you want.
Yeah,
awesome.
if reality is not giving it to me, I can just make, write about it in my books, fictionalize it, and all my enemies, I can, if I have them, I can just kill them off in my books, and feel good about it,
Exactly. That's what I love about it. You can just do whatever you want to do, make up any city, make him do,
Yeah.
That's the most enjoyable thing about writing for me. And it's relaxing.
It is. It is. But then sometimes, like you say, when it's fiction, you do try to add some realism in there.
Yeah.
And, because I have put myself into so many books. I have been just about anybody I wanted to be. But then I start, coming down to realize that writing is what I want to do. Like you said at the beginning, it's not about the money. It was at first, but now for me it was, but now it's not. It's just something I just love doing. I love creating. I love, of writing. I mean, it's just something I just have to do. I think it's something that writers have to do is to create. I mean, if you couldn't create and you were a creator, you'd go nuts, I think. I got to do something. I got to write. I got to, and at least for me. And it works. It works. All right. Do you have one of your books with you and you can read an excerpt, a small excerpt from one of your books?
How long of an episode are we talking? Do you like a paragraph?
Maybe two. That's it.
Two paragraphs? Okay. So what I'm going to read to you is the scene of when she... Well, I'll just read it and then you guys try to see if I can figure it out. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I got closer to the tub and noticed Brooke's wrists were cut. She was naked, and a couple bruises were on her forehead. Blood dripped from her wrists, which formed a pool of blood on the floor. The air was thick with a pungent smell similar to rusty nails. There was blood spattered on the wall, and one of her legs hung over the side of the tub. Her head lay at an oblique angle, and her long, black, wet hair fell to the floor. Her eyes were closed. I opened my mouth to scream, but nothing came out. I reached my pocket for my Motorola to dial 911, only it wasn't there. As I looked around, frantic, my hands trembled. Police sirens echoed and began getting louder and louder. Then suddenly, I heard the front door burst open, followed by several thunderous footsteps up the stairs.
Wow, that sounds great. Yeah, that was short. I mean, I was interested, okay. And all of a sudden it got cut off. I said, what? Okay. One more paragraph, okay? All right.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the police. We have you surrounded, a deep voice boomed. I immediately put my arms up. Step away from the body. I didn't do this, I shouted as I slowly backed away from the tub. My eyes were flooded with tears as they streamed down my cheek. We received a call that a girl was in trouble, one of the officers said. At that moment, I realized I was set up.
Oh, wow. That sounds interesting. It still makes me want to find out what happened next. And that's what I like about books. And that's what most readers and writers want when they're reading books, is something that's going to make them want to turn that page.
Exactly.
Keep going, you know, and that's what I like. And that's what I try to write, to make people say, damn, George, what happened next? You know,
exactly. Me too. That should be every writer's goal, to try to write it in a way where people want to keep reading and find out what's going to happen next, right?
But you know what? I have read material where that didn't happen. I have read books where that did not happen. I mean, you start reading on the first page, you want to throw the book down, you know, or the second page.
Put it in the fire.
and sometimes, you know, sometimes books, fictional books, stories, they don't get started until the middle of the book. And that's wrong. And nothing started happening until the middle or at the very end.
Yeah. Which is dumb because you read the whole book. It's like, so yeah. No, that's the
okay,
thing. When I was writing the book, I researched. I researched all that stuff to try to hook somebody. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right. What was the name of that particular book?
That was
a young adult. What was the? Okay.
Masquerade of Lies.
Do you have any input put on your covers to make the cover design of everything that you write? Do you have input on that?
Yes, because I'm self-published. So I found this girl online, and she's amazing. I think her name is Laura, and her I think it's The Book Machine. But anyways, she's amazing. She did my cover. I told her exactly the way I wanted it, and she did it, and it looks amazing. So I'm very pleased with it.
Okay.
That's one of the advantages of being self-published, is that you have all the control. That's one thing I like about.
Yeah, you do. You do. I write and I design all my covers. I pick whatever my covers. I pick whatever they look like. Every one, stories, books, essays, I just do it all because I don't think you should pay someone for something that you can do yourself. You know,
yeah.
I do my own editing. I do.
I have no idea how to do a cover. I have no idea. Like I told her what I want, but I can design it too.
Okay, no problem with that.
I think editing is important. Like I did do my own editing, like first draft, and then I hired someone else to complete the edit, like to go over it again to make sure that I didn't miss anything. So.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm just saying if you can do it, you can do it yourself. If you're not, you're going to need help. Bring help in. That's no problem with that. All right, where can we find your work? I mean, if someone wanted to say, hey, wow, I love that book that she's talked about on the George Wilder Jr. Show, I need to find it. Where can people go to find your book?
Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. If you're in the States, so Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.
Do you have a website?
Yes.
Where people can go?
www.himbestbooks.com. Just Google Himbest Books.
Oh, great.
There I am.
Wow, that's great. And you've gotten how many books? I mean, if we go to Amazon, we're gonna scroll down. You have about five or six books up there. Children
six
books.
Altogether, yeah. I got five children books, cool. One young adult book. Another one's coming. I'm writing another one right now.
All right. When do you think you'll be done with it?
I'm hoping by summer. But I don't know. Like, you know, okay. You say that, but okay. You never know. I'm going to try to get it done by
You never know. Summer. Yeah, you never know. I'm working on some stuff, too.
You can also find me
author
on Twitter and Google Plus. Uh-huh. I'm online, so I'm on all the social networks.
you're easy to find, right?
Yes, definitely. I'm everywhere.
Okay, all right. Author Wendy Henbest on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Wendy, would you like a link of this show? So if you have a website, you can put this show on your website and people can come by and listen to you on this show.
Sounds good. I love that.
Okay. All right. I'll get it to you in about 3 hours. The show has to process first. Okay. Once it's processed, I will.
I said, no problem.
Okay, all righty, I will get it to you, and then you can just find a way to post it on your website, and you know, people come by your website, they'll hear you talking about your work on the show, okay?
Sounds good, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. You're always welcome back. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
All right, Wendy Henbest on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to take a musical break, folks, and we will be right back. All right. Thank you. Thank you. I almost slept that one. Anyway, Donald Trump is being sued by, it says here an apprentice contestant. I mean, that was announced today. So I saw that online. I saw it on MSN.com. And I also saw it on USA Today. Those are two credible websites that I use all the time. So I know it's not fake news. Okay. He's being sued. Exactly. And 2 or 3 days from now, he will be inaugurated into the White House as the 45th president. So, you know, he's being sued and these people aren't joking. He has been sued. I mean, she has filed the papers according to these websites. And that's going to hinder him. I do think that Donald Trump is going to have trouble for the rest of his presidency. If that's 4 years, 8 years, or if it's 6 months, he's going to have trouble. I mean, there's people right now boycotting his inauguration. There's going to be more protests at his inauguration than there are going to be people or entertainers or people just coming to just to be a part of it. I think it's going to be something because, I mean, everybody's heard about his fight with Representative John Lewis. I mean, I don't have to tell you what happened there, but anyway, you know, that's all over the place. 40 to 50 Democrats, I'm thinking in Congress, they say, or more, are not going to show up. Teenagers, some singers, entertainers. I wanted to say entertainers, movie stars, or singers, or whatever. A lot of these people aren't going to show up. Many of them have backed out. Trump doesn't believe that he's going into the White House at a 40% approval rating. He's saying that the polls are rigged. Of course, the polls are rigged. The media is rigged. The election is rigged. If it's not going Donald Trump's way, it's rigged. It's totally rigged. But anyway, he's got a lawsuit up his ass. And all of this is just going to play into it that this guy is just, in my opinion, and just me. Okay, don't turn off the radio or the internet because I'm going to say this. If you want to, you can. I think he's unfit for office. But there is no way I want him to fail as president. No, I don't want. Donald Trump is going to do all of that on his own. There are some diehard people out here who are diehard Donald Trump supporters, and they will unfriend you if you say anything negative about him. But Donald Trump has been saying negative things about people ever since he started running for president, you know, and he's in a lot of mess. I wanted to say another word, but he's in a lot of mess because he is actually being sued by some woman that said he probably groped her or something. And he tweeted that Donald Trump tweeted a few months ago that he never done any of those things to those women, who those 50, 60 women, maybe more, who have accused him. When he has said completely, and it came directly out of his mouth and it's on tape, that he fondled women and that he walked into contestants' dressing rooms while they were getting dressed. He have admitted it himself. And then he turns around and says, that's not true. I don't know, but, you know, he's going to be president of the United States, so we have to all give him our best. We don't want him to fail. But with this lawsuit, he's going to be going to court. And this woman, she's got a high-powered lawyer. Wow. I mean, stay tuned, folks. Get your popcorn out. The Donald Trump administration is going to be one for the record books. It's going to be one for history. And Obama is leaving, and there's no doubt about it. He's on his way out. I mean, he's packing. He's doing this and doing that. But I don't want to say Obama's presidency was a failure. But I do know that there's a lot of things he could have done, he should have done. Even he admits it. He admits it that there's a lot of things he could have done, should have done. Because when Obama was running for president in 2008, we just felt so good about this guy. We felt great about this guy. I know I did. I thought he was going to come in and change the landscape. I thought he was going to change politics for the next century. A lot of people thought he was the Messiah, Jesus coming back to earth, you know. But that kind of failed for me. What failed me with Obama is that when Obama finally was in the White House as president in 2009, he started acting like a politician. And that just, I said, oh my God, this guy is another politician. He's another. And in some cases, we thought he was a Republican because he kept running after Republicans, and the Republicans were just slapping him in the face, not literally, but, you know. But he kept on. We were all saying that Obama was like a kid in the playground, and the bullies come up and slap him on the face, knock him down, and he'd get right up off the ground and give the bullies everything they want and pat them on the back. And to us, the bullies were the Republicans, you know. So put it this way, folks. Obama was not the president that we thought he was going to turn out to be. And now he's leaving us with this atrocity, Donald Trump. And he's leaving the world, I think, more of a dangerous place than when he took office. Were there any accomplishments by Obama? There was maybe one or two, but that happened early in his first term. He saved the economy, you know, from going over the cliff. He came in and saved it on his own, you know. But after that, everything just went downhill. It seemed like we understand that the Republicans were a bunch of obstructive assholes. We know that. But Obama has, you know, his executive powers. He could have done a lot of great things with that, especially for African Americans, the people who are responsible for him being in office in the first place. He did nothing for those people, and he acknowledges it that he could have done right now. And he was out there campaigning for Hillary like hell, and a lot of people didn't like that. They didn't like that. There's so many people who turned against Obama and voted for Trump. They did not vote for Hillary. They turned and voted for Trump. The reason why they voted for Trump is they were disappointed in Obama. They didn't want to give Hillary a third term because that equated and Barack Obama third term. That's all it was. If Hillary would have won, she'd have been Barack Obama's third term. And he knows it. He knows it. And I knew it. Hillary had flaws. She had her flaws, man. She really did. But up against Donald Trump, she was the best of the two. There's no doubt about it. She was the best of the two. But Obama is leaving office, and it will be in a couple of days, 2 or 3 days, and he's going to leave us with Donald Trump. But he said he's not going to be idle, stand by and be idle. He is still going to fight. He may just go back to being a community organizer. But one of the things he didn't have when he first ran for president that he does now, money. He has got plenty of money. They are richer than their dreams. And all he's going to do once he actually is out of office is get richer. People are going to pay him because he's a great speaker. I admit, Obama sounds good speaking. And that's what revved up so many people back in 2008 to vote for him, because we felt like we had somebody in office. You know, I mean, everybody voted for him. Blacks, white, Hispanics, I mean, you name it. Obama ran the gamut, but he couldn't do it this time because so many people were or are in the same shape, if not worse, than when he first ran for office, and they were just upset. So many people felt like their voices weren't heard, or they were isolated, or nothing was done to better their lives after giving this guy their vote twice. And now he wanted them to give them their vote a third time for Hillary, and they just said no. They just said no, and they voted for Trump. And Obama knows this, but he will not admit it. He will not, you know, say it, but he knows it. He knows a lot of people who voted for him twice did not want to vote for him a third time. That's why Trump is in the White House and Hillary is at home. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, 635. Wow, it's great. Again, my guest was Wendy Henbest. She was great. She was wonderful. Hopefully she'll come back, you know, but that remains to be seen. That's on her part. All righty, what we got now? We've talked about Obama and Trump, and I've said before, the inauguration for Trump is Friday the 20th. A lot of people are going to not be there, and I'm not going to watch it on television. I'm going to hear certain things about it. I'm going to be busy. It's going to be something, folks. It's going to be really something. And a lot of people are saying that Trump's cabinet picks. Yeah, a lot of people were talking about Trump's cabinet picks. Every one of these people that he's picked to run the government under him, they are questionable. Some of these people don't even know what they're doing. They answer questions without any experience. He's picking people. Basically, the bottom line, Trump is choosing people that are going to kiss his ass. That's the bottom line. People who are going to make him feel like he's king of the United States. He's picking yes people. He's picking people who don't know crap about the job. They don't know crap. I mean, you listen to them talking at these interviews on television, and you tell yourself, boy, we are in trouble. You know, we are in trouble. They know nothing about facts and science. They know nothing about health. They know nothing about education, energy, or any of this stuff, the post that they're going to be filling. They may not even know anything about the Department of Justice. And he's putting these people in charge. Most of them are racist, mean, nasty. They're going to just rip up the government. And in my sense, because if you hire someone to work for you and this person has no experience at what you want them to do and you hire them, what do you think is going to happen? That's the way I think what's going to happen with Donald Trump. You know, so I don't know. Maybe there are some watchdogs out there, but I do know that half the country, all 50 states, are going to be protesting Donald Trump on Friday. All 50 states. I mean, you got about 42 countries that are going to be protesting the presidency of Donald Trump. And he's saying the polling is rigged? Really? Donald Trump, one of the things about Donald Trump, he's thin-skinned and he refuses to see the writing on the wall. Just because all of these people are protesting and bitching about him and arguing and don't want him in, that doesn't mean that he cannot be a successful president. Donald Trump has to learn how to shut out the noise, how to ignore the noise and get on with governing the United States, get on with leading America. there's always going to be people who are going to challenge him. There's always going to be people who are going to say things, this or that, that or this about him. He should just ignore that instead of getting on Twitter and just reaching out, lashing out revenge on people because they say something negative about him or something that he thinks is not true. He should just ignore all of that. But we got this guy who loves to tweet. He loves to tweet. This is crazy. You're the president of the United States. I mean, leave that little small stuff alone. You got bigger fish to fry. You don't need, just because somebody's call you, say that your hair is ridiculous, it doesn't mean you got to get on Twitter and lash out and lash back at this person. You're going to be president of the United States. You've got the world to tend with. But that's Donald. Donald Trump has turned the press on him. He's turned women against him. You know, I mean, he has some building to do. The country is totally, totally, unequivocally divided. There is no doubt about it. He has to try to bring the country together. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see it. I'm hoping that it's possible to bring the country together as one. Donald Trump has to understand this. He's not the president of some people. He's not the president of white people, or he is the president of all people. Every citizen in the United States, he is the president of. Someone has to tell him that. He cannot think that he's just one third of the country or one half of the country. He's going to be acting like a president. He's got to act like a president to all people, 100%. You know, so Donald Trump has some and he's going to be something else to cover. He's going to be something else to cover. A lot of people are calling his cabinet picks a bunch of crooks, a bunch of racists, a bunch of haters, as I've just got through saying. But like I said before, I don't want Donald Trump to be a failure. I want him to be successful in office, because if Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, is successful in office, America will be successful. But right now, him and Russia, I don't know, him and Russia, they are, you know, cozy. There's no doubt about it. Trump and Russia, they're cozy. There's no doubt about it that Russia played a part in getting Trump elected. That's why so many people are calling him an illegitimate president. And you think about this electoral college. You know, Trump won this election with 302 votes. When he only needed 270 votes, but he won it with 302 votes. If you think about it, 270, 302 votes. How in the hell does that eclipse over almost 3 million votes that Hillary Clinton has gotten? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And a lot of people are saying he's illegitimate. Because Russia interfered. Actually, if you go back and look at some of those tapes, those videos, you will see that Trump actually looked into the camera and told Russia to hack Hillary Clinton. He told Russia to meddle into the election. Now he's dismissing that and saying he didn't say it, or he didn't mean it, or it was sarcasm. I don't know. Anyway, we've got we've got a long way to go with Donald Trump, if he can make it. Some people saying he's not going to make 2 months or 6 months. But we'll know after 6 months where he stands, if he stands anywhere. All right, we're going to take, let's see, what do we got here? Can we get some, oh. All right, folks, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, right here, Google, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. you know, Amazon, check me out on Amazon. I'm all on Amazon. And, you know, like, this is fun. This is great. Like, we're recording this thing out of Chicago. And it is like I was telling Wendy, it is kind of windy and cold, not cold, but raining. And, you know, if I don't have to deal with the snow, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Let's see if we can't.
We do a lot of stories on family, and we know families with loved ones in the nursing home often wonder, are they really okay? And it's a nightmare if we believe that they're being mistreated. We have a horrific example of what can go wrong. Her colleague Jane Velez Mitchell brought this story tonight, to light, that is, last night on Issues. Let's get you the story. Tragic story, 78-year-old Lois.
All righty.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Any essential distinction between Donald Trump being merely an idiot marionette belonging to Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump behaving like an active Russian agent has been fully erased in the course of just over 1 week, and it has been erased by Donald Trump. When the damning stain of illegitimacy grows on this presidency week by week, hour by hour, when every moment of the political discourse of this nation becomes consumed by a debate over not whether he has been placed in office by the efforts of a foreign power, but a debate over how much of that subversion he knew in advance, he will have no one to blame but himself, because he cannot leave it alone, because every move Donald Trump has made this year has been politically tone deaf. He could not make it look more like he is covering up something, something horrifying, if he hung a sign around his neck reading, cover up. He reeks of cover up. And in his neurosis, unsatisfied with having fooled some of the people some of the time, he has not merely ignored the option a real president would take, invite a full investigation. He has also waited weeks before trying the option a skilled traitor would take, shut up and change the subject to, say, Meryl Streep. And still, like a desperate child, he has to keep bringing this subject up, keep shouting those key words that he should never speak again, Russia, hacking, Assange, Putin, until he can presumably convince himself that he has convinced everyone everywhere that none of it is true, and until he can convince himself everyone now agrees with him about how strong and powerful he is and how he has now won. It is madness, and it will destroy him. December 29th, I think we ought to get on with our lives. I think that computers have complicated lives very greatly. The whole age of computer has made it where nobody knows exactly what's going on. But saying nobody knows exactly what's going on means even he doesn't know exactly what's going on, and he can't let anybody believe that. December 31st, I know a lot about hacking, and hacking is a very hard thing to prove, so it could be somebody else. And I also know things that other people don't know, and so they cannot be sure of this situation. Pool reporter, what do you know that other people don't know? Trump, you'll find out Tuesday or Wednesday. All we found out Tuesday or Wednesday was his willingness to publicly advertise his own paranoia. Tuesday, January 3rd, 8:14 p.m., the, quote, intelligence briefing on so-called, quote, Russian hacking was delayed until Friday. Perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. The delay was for a family emergency. The delay was of an intelligence briefing, the likes of which he has reportedly been skipping for 2 months. Wednesday, January 4th, 7:22 a.m. Julian Assange said a 14-year-old could have hacked Podesta. Why was DNC so careless? Also said Russians did not give him the info. Trump has here cited and given credibility to Assange of WikiLeaks, about whose activities Trump said in December 2010, I think it's disgraceful. I think there should be, like, death penalty or something. Wednesday, January 4th, 8:27 a.m. Somebody hacked the DNC, but why did they not have hacking defense like the RNC has? And why have they not responded to the terrible things they did and said, like giving the questions to the debate to H, a total double standard? Media, as usual, gave them a pass. Trump has now justified international espionage against Americans, provided they are guilty of something, or provided he merely thinks they are guilty of something, especially if the espionage involves Julius Assange. Thursday, January 5th, 8:25 a.m., the dishonest media likes saying that I am in agreement with Julian Assange. Wrong. I simply state what he states. It is for the people to make up their own minds as to the truth. The media lies to make it look like I am against intelligence when in fact I am a big fan. He cannot leave it alone. He must not only erase what he himself has just done, he must find a new scapegoat. Thursday, January 5th, 7:24 p.m. How did NBC get an exclusive look into the top secret report he, Obama, was presented? Who gave them this report and why? Politics. He asks about NBC, but he does so in his standard way of scapegoating the media. Politically, scornfully, not seriously, not officially, not ominously. But the next morning, somebody else does all that for him. The tweet from WikiLeaks. The Obama admin CIA is illegally funneling top secret comment information to NBC for political reasons before POTUS even gets to read it. That tweet was from 5:48 a.m. January 6th. The next tweet is from 11:51 a.m. January 6th. Trump, I'm asking the chairs of the House and Senate committees to investigate top secret intelligence shared with NBC prior to me seeing it. He's now desperate enough to try to change the subject from his connection to WikiLeaks that he does not even seem to realize he has just connected himself to WikiLeaks. Perhaps somebody pointed that out to him too, because next, by phone, to the New York Times, China relatively recently hacked 20 million government names. How come nobody even talks about that? This is a political witch hunt. Then comes the actual briefing on the hacking, a briefing he had avoided, on hacking he had dismissed from an
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right. Okay. We're going to do, thanks, Keith. We're going to do, since yesterday, prior to this show, yesterday, was Martin Luther King's birthday. I'm hearing that he, if he had lived, he would have been 88 years old. You know, Martin Luther King, he was one of my heroes, folks. I'm not going to lie about that. He was one of my biggest heroes. I mean, especially after I learned so much about him, you know, I don't want to tell my age too much, but I lived in the era of Martin Luther King. I was there, you know, a child of the 60s. I was there. And 1968, you know, I was there when he was assassinated in 1968. Whoa, was that something? Was that something? But anyway, he's one of my heroes, and I want to do this. I want to play this. You probably heard it 1,000 times, so you're going to hear it one more time on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to hear his I Have a Dream speech. I think we have it in its entirety. It is 6:52 p.m. straight up Chicago time, so we have enough time to play that I Have a Dream speech. And it's one day after his birthday, because it was commemorated yesterday. And we're just going to do it today on the George Wilder Jr. Show, because we were not on the air on his birthday. We celebrated his birthday by staying off the air and doing some things. So, but we do have, I do have the 1963 speech, I Have a Dream speech. So just hopefully, and also we have his last speech. So we'll do both of those. Because he was such a dominating figure, if I can say that. All right, here it is, Martin Luther King, 1963, I Have a Dream speech. Always, always impelling and always rousing and riveting. Here we go.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York,
Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
All right, that was Martin Luther King, 1963. I Have a Dream speech. I hope you heard it in his, and it was pretty clear. If there was any breakups or pauses in it, I apologize. It is over 50 years old, so, but it still sounds good. He's still a great orator. He's still a great speaker, and he's always, going to be around every year on his birthday, Martin Luther King Day. And like I said, his birthday was yesterday. This is the 17th for anybody podcasting the show later on. And we decided to do it today. And we're also going to do what some say was his last speech. This one is not as long, but it's about 2 or 3 minutes long. But it's not as long, but this is his last speech. But it's pivotal. I mean, it's quintessential Martin Luther King, and this was his last speech.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Tonight, I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yeah,
All right, we're right back on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're having some computer problems. I hope you guys don't notice it out there, but we are noticing it here. It is 7:18 straight up Chicago time. I hope you liked Martin Luther King on the George Wilder Jr. Show. This has just came across my desk. Let me just try something here for a minute, folks. All righty. This just came across my desk. Black kids attend school on how to deal with the police. Oh, there's a school. Excuse me. I'm assuming on the south and west sides of the city that is teaching black children how to deal with the police. You know, I should think there should be schools for the police to learn how to deal with the black youth. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure there probably is out there, but that's kind of, I don't know if that's going to be helping them to stay alive and not to be shot or gunned down in the back. As you know, Chicago had a federal investigation report released a few days ago, and it was not good. I thought I had was going to have someone to speak on that. Let's see if we can find someone to speak on that. We're going up and down the scale here, folks. All right. Listen, bombing criticism. We're looking for someone to speak on that. The federal investigation that we might not have it. Let's see. Clip number two, clip number three. Okay. Oh, it could be under another name. That's possible. Doing how to get more. Okay. We don't know. All righty. Okay. Electoral College. Let's see. A lot of people have asked me about the Electoral College. Some people don't even understand it. In some cases, I don't understand it. And if I do actually understand it, it's not fair. I think if you go out there and vote, your vote should be counted. Not, I mean, 300 to 270 votes should not equate over 300 million votes or close to 300 million votes. That's crazy. And even I just learned something about it, because I'm thinking every time you vote out there, it's a popular vote, but it's electoral. It's, you know, it's crazy. So we have this for you in case you are trying to understand the electoral vote, or if you know someone who wants to understand it a little bit better. Here we go.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need, this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of the country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But, you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of. But he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome, even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas one.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone who never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all. Now lay me down before I go to sleep.
troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep. Keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.
I want to thank everybody out there for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's been fun. And once again, I want to thank my guest, Wendy Hinsbeck, H-I-N-B-E-S-T, Hinbest. All right. Sometimes I have a problem pronouncing names. It's just me, folks. All right. Like I said before, I want to thank her. She was great. She was wonderful. Hopefully she'll come back to the show. Who knows? All righty. Happy 2017. One more time. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Belated Martin Luther King Day. I hope you enjoyed those speeches. We will play them throughout the month periodically, and because they're great and they're wonderful. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show. Please, someone just 10 seconds. Okay. Please join me tomorrow. All right. Bye-bye. Thanks. Goodbye, everybody.
Investigation.